The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from our secret underground studio in Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! I hope you're ready, because here we go. Now, concerning this alleged CIA whistleblower who just dumped on the rump, if this guy was an actual CIA whistleblower, then they would be hounding him to the ends of the earth. And he would end up either incommunicado in some supermax or living in exile in some country that does not have an extradition treaty with the United States. Well, I can guarantee you that this, quote, CIA whistleblower, unquote, is a partisan hack that enjoys protection in high places, and that this whole thing is a political hit job that is not going to end well for anyone, especially for the Democrats, as they seem hell-bent upon giving the rump 4 more years in the White House. I mean, Joe Biden, please. Hello, 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 and welcome to the Thunderbolt for November 15th, 2019. For the November 1st program, I covered parts 1 through 6 of a show called Symbiotic Adventures in the Land of the Anti-Olympia. This week, I want to cover some of the organizations that participated in the Symbiosis Congress, and so now we continue with part 7, Disaster Anti-Capitalism. First, I wish to describe the Asbury Park Transformation Justice Project. Now, part of my concern over the whiteness of the Symbiosis Congress was rooted in a schooling I received during the Occupy movement, when I became curious, after justifiable criticism over the fact that Occupy was so white, I wondered why that was. Especially since I knew that Occupy Olympia, at least, would have welcomed people of color with open arms. So in response to my queries on the subject, a black woman from Seattle informed me that when black people see middle-class white people, which is what Occupy was mostly made up of, then what they see are their historical oppressors. Slap myself on the forehead. Yes, middle-class white people are not gonna win the trust of black people simply by saying that they're on their side. Yes, they're gonna have to do some serious walking of the walk, and then some. At the Symbiosis Congress, I spoke with Janie from Asbury Park, New Jersey. Janie works with the Asbury Park Transformative Justice Project, which is an organization that promotes the transformative justice model of criminal justice that I have extensively and approvingly reported upon right here in the Thunderbolt several times. Now, Janie is a large black woman who possesses a certain strength of character that I have found almost unique to black women who have been forged by the pressure of being at the very bottom of our great national oppression barrel for several centuries now. So Janie is one of those activists whose effectiveness, I suspect, derives from the fact that people are simply afraid to not do whatever it is that Janie wants them to do. And in speaking about racism, Janie told me that if any white people really wanted to help black people, then they needed to understand that black people are fully capable of saving themselves, and that all they need are some resources, which is the one thing that white people can indeed give to black people, since we have them and they do not. Thus, Janie's advice to white people who want to help black people is to simply provide the resources and then step the hell out of the way. And if we want to be of further use past that, Janie suggests that we could start by dismantling this frigging oppression machine that we have created, and from which we have so greatly benefited for so many centuries now. Janie acknowledged that most of the problems with white people stem from ignorance rather than from evil intent. And she understood that it needed to be people of color that relieved white people of their ignorance. But she also pointed out This is just very difficult for people of color because so many white people tend to be such arrogant, patronizing assholes. And note, this was not the wording Janie used to describe white people, but I am here indulging another positive aspect to my white privilege, and that I can get away with saying stuff like that, whilst someone like Janie needs to be much more circumspect. But I suspect that Janie would not disagree with my generalizations of white people, even if she would be much more likely to put it a little more politely. If you wish to know more about Janie's work with Transformative Justice, go to aptransformativejustice.org. That's aptransformativejustice.org. So I also spoke with some folks from Northfield, Minnesota, who work with an organization called Cooperation Northfield. Now, Cooperation Northfield is an umbrella organization that encompasses multiple projects. They are a collective cadre organization in that organizers from each of the projects gather weekly to engage in consensus democratic decision-making for the whole organization, though most projects remain primarily autonomous. Sounds like a bunch of anarchists to me. So amongst the organizations working within Cooperation Northfield are an Acorn Housing Cooperative, the Northfield Curbside Compost, the Feed the People Farm Worker Co-op, and Northfield Against Line 3, which is a tar sands oil pipeline solidarity project with Anishinaabe indigenous leaders in northern Minnesota. Cooperation Northfield also works on worker and union organizing. And another very exciting thing that Cooperation Northfield is doing is focusing upon youth, which regular listeners know is yet another core strategic step that I preach. The kids of the future. The kids are who this is all for. Cooperation Northfield is also engaging in yet another strategic step I consider vital to our revolution, in that they are, quote, building a base of working class people through structure-based organizing for a long-term and rooted base of power, at the same time as we are also cohering mask layers of self-selecting activists into key and specific fights to build layers of people with critical direct action and organizing skills, unquote. Yippee! In other words, the folks at Cooperation Northfield are building holistic and diverse networks. Yippee! I also spoke with Robin of the Carbondale Spring Project. The Carbondale Spring Project is promoting four proposals in Carbondale, Illinois, concerning issues of food autonomy, enabling care workers, investing in a cooperative business fund, and investing in a renewable energy fund. The Carbondale Spring People also do a lot of disaster relief, as did several of the other organizations represented at Symbiosis. And since taking care of ourselves and making their oppression machine irrelevant to our lives is the very strategy I have been promoting for years right here in the Thunderbolt, the disaster relief is definitely a vital component to that. I have coined this strategy disaster anti-capitalism. Anyway, as for funding their four projects, it turns out that Carbondale has double the national average for numbers of both police officers and police employees. And so the Carbondale Spring folks plan to pay for all their projects by basically dismantling their overlarge police force. And they have come up with a detailed plan to do just that. And I will now quote from the Carbondale Spring website. Each of these initiatives will create or retain local jobs that are supportive of the community and each other. Each will build resilience in the face of the climate and economic challenges we face, and will transform the real substance of our town, creating a sense that we are facing our challenges head on as a community. They will, of themselves, help to rebrand Carbondale, but in a deep and transformative way, rather than the superficial changes proposed by the logic of marketing. These four initiatives will radically transform Carbondale, taking it in a direction that many of us only dream about. These dreams, however, reflect a necessity. This is the kind of bold transformation that is urgently required of us to address the climate crisis we face. Unquote. Go to carbondalespring.org for more information. And while at Symbiosis, I also spoke with Mel of the Cooperative New School for Urban Studies and Environmental Justice in Chico, California. Now, this is an educational project, but Mel also does lots of disaster relief work. As you may remember, Chico and neighboring Paradise were both hit hard by wildfires last year. And Paradise was, in fact, virtually wiped out. So now, from the Cooperative New School's website, the Cooperative New School is a next-generation institution for popular education that is fully online and governed cooperatively by students, faculty, and staff. Popular education is politically conscious in that it recognizes oppressive structures in our society. It aims at social transformation through the self-empowerment of people who are socially marginalized or who are not sufficiently served by the established academic institutions. Our collaborative structure, in which student owners and faculty owners co-create our curriculum, as well as teach and learn from each other. And it is rooted in these principles. And popular education originates in many parts of the globe. The purpose of this institution is to prepare activists, organizers, and social entrepreneurs to survive and fight back in this rapidly changing world. And we believe that dealing with environmental change and catastrophe will begin in local communities with basic skills. Skills which have been lost in the industrial age. Growing food is one of those basic skills that the Cooperative New School courses focuses upon. For more information about their work, you can go to the cooperativenewschool.com. And as for Detroit, well, Detroiters are not just taking this lying down. For instance, there are over 1,200 community gardens within the city of Detroit. We visited one of them on a bus tour organized by the James and Grace Lee Boggs Center to Nurture Community Leadership, which is located in Detroit. And during this tour, we received a history of Detroit, learned of many of its heroes, and we learned the many steps Detroiters are taking to regain agency over their own lives. The Boggs Center does all kinds of similar work, empowering the victims of Detroit's abandonment. Reading now from the Boggs Center website, our mission is to nurture the transformational leadership capacities of individuals and organizations committed to creating productive, sustainable, ecologically responsible, and just communities. Through local, national, and international networks of activists, artists, and intellectuals, we foster new ways of living, being, and thinking to face the challenges of the 21st century. For more information about the Boggs Center, go to boggscenter.org. Boggs is B-O-G-G-S. And Detroit is also the home of one of the craziest and most amazing art exhibits I've ever seen. In the form of the Heidelberg Project, which is headed by an artist named Tyree Guiton, G-U-I-T-O-N. And I can't even begin to describe this project in any manner that does it any kind of justice. And so I suggest you go to Google Earth and type 3679 Heidelberg Street, Detroit, Michigan, 48207. And then go to Street View and cruise around that block a couple of times as the Heidelberg Project takes up that entire city block and portions of the surrounding blocks as well. And even street view is absolutely nothing like actually walking around in the middle of it. But you can get the general idea. You can also go to Heidelberg.org. Now keep in mind that all of this is in the middle of a neighborhood where over half the buildings are abandoned and decaying. And Street View will also reveal that if you continue your explorations into the surrounding neighborhoods. There are also entire sections of the city near the Heidelberg Project that are filled with massive abandoned manufacturing facilities. And each individual 4- and 5-story building takes up an entire city block. And these monstrous abandoned buildings go on for blocks on end. And with their vast size, and with their endless gaping open holes, where the windows used to be, these buildings appear to be no more than a perfect metaphor of a dying society. And on that note, we will end Symbiotic Adventures in the Land of the Anti-Olympia. But don't worry, we have another thunderbolt all ready to strike right after this station break. So stay tuned. The views expressed on the Thunderbolt are my views, and no one else's. Those views do not necessarily reflect the views of any of the stations that air the Thunderbolt, nor anybody that has anything to do with any of those stations. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. All right. Once again, our biannual election circus has come to town. Yes, indeed, kids. The clowns and the barkers and the freaks are all coming out of the woodwork to keep you nice and distracted as our world burns. Sorry, Sly, but actually, you do. Evidently, Joe Biden is running out of gas. And who didn't see that coming? Whilst Elizabeth Warren seems to be the upsurge candidate for the Democratic Party nomination. Though, personally, I've always considered Elizabeth Warren to be a corrupt sheepdog for the Democratic Party, as she has always talked the talk, but she has never actually walked the walk. Amongst a plethora of evidence indicating that fact is the fact that Elizabeth Warren endorsed Hillary Clinton rather than Bernie Sanders in the last presidential primary. That told me all I needed to know about Elizabeth Warren. But in case that isn't enough for you, then here's even more such evidence. When asked if she thought that relatives of a sitting vice president should have jobs with foreign companies that are doing business with the U.S. government, Ms. Warren immediately and forcefully said absolutely not. But then she hesitated as she realized the underlying context of what they were actually asking. Whereupon, Ms. Warren very embarrassingly backpedaled and stumbled over herself as she amended her forceful absolutely not with a sheepish actually, I'm going to have to consult my people first before I can answer that question. So much for core principles. Next, as a public service, the Thunderbolt wishes to provide an update on what is really happening in the Rojava situation. Here's a star. As I warned a couple of years ago, and got some flack for doing so, I might add. From the very beginning of the Rojava experiment, the elephant in their living room was always the fact that their social experiment was being funded largely by the U.S. State Department and by the CIA. Now that is always problematic for a large number and for a wide variety of reasons. And one of those many reasons is the Americans' propensity for throwing their allies under the bus as soon as they are done using them. Well, in a betrayal worthy of a Shakespearean play, after the Kurds thoroughly kicked ISIS's ass, the rump announced that he was throwing northeastern Syria, including Rojava, not only under the bus, but right into the path of some serious ethnic cleansing. Because no matter what the rump is saying about Syria, what he is doing is pulling out American troops, thus giving Turkey free rein, meaning that Turkey is about to invade northeastern Syria in order to get rid of all the Kurds, because Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says that all the Kurds are terrorists. Well, in Mr. Erdogan's case, you might say it takes one to know one. A whole bunch of the documents published by WikiLeaks revealed Mr. Erdogan's own very close and long-time affiliations with, guess who? ISIS! This includes laundering ISIS's money, buying ISIS's oil, and arming ISIS fighters in Syria at the very same time that the U.S. was fighting ISIS in Syria. Whilst yet other factions of Americans were also arming ISIS at the same time, because at one point the State Department and the CIA were fighting on opposite sides in Syria. And that insane state of affairs,
come on now, show us your neck,
is most certainly,
let's get it out,
not as usual.
Oh, it's bigoted.
As you may think it is.
The green trash.
And so now ISIS's good buddy, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, is about to remove ISIS's number one enemy in Syria, leaving a power vacuum.
Good night, like a big green trash.
That is most likely to become occupied by you know who.
Good night.
But don't worry, because when we're on both sides,
come on now, show us your niches. Let's get it out.
We can't lose.
Oh, it's bigoted.
The thing is, though, that everyone else always ends up losing everything. The single most important lesson that my life has seemed determined to teach me over and over again is how incredibly many things there are that I don't know. Yes, I know that I sound like a know-it-all in this newscast. That is because I do know a few things, and I have very good sources of information, but mostly because I try not to talk about things unless I know what I'm talking about. I think the world would be a much better place if more people did that. So I happen to be very good at spotting and nailing political bullshite and exposing the truths lying underneath. And I think that is a vital job at this point of time. However, one major exception to my predictive abilities is when it comes to what the American voter is going to do. In 1980, I never in a million years would have thought that Americans would actually elect an intellectually challenged B-grade movie actor for president. Especially after what he had done as governor of California. And I absolutely never thought that George Bush would ever win re-election. And until just before this election, I never would have considered even in the most remote possibility that Donald Trump could ever win a presidential election in a million years. While I did indeed end up predicting that the Rump would win, that was based upon my knowledge that the president these days is chosen by a few rigged voting tabulators in a few key states rather than by the voters. And so when I figured out from James Comey that the machine had decided to go with the Rump rather than with Hillary Clinton, then I knew that they only needed enough actual votes to be able to maintain at least a semblance of credibility whilst stealing the election. And right now, the one absolutely clear message that voters sent during the last election, and that they seem to be sending again this time, is that business as usual is absolutely no longer an option. So I guess we'll see if the Rump has managed to convince enough people that he's not a swamp creature himself, and or if the Democrats are actually stupid enough to follow the current leadership over the cliff by trying to sell us yet another one of their sold-out corporate shills and warmongers. In any case, I'll betcha we're going to end up with yet another corporate sold-out warmonger for president in any case. Because Goldman Sachs wouldn't have it any other way. That is, unless we get in their way. And on that note, that's it for the news and commentary section for this week's show. Meaning that it is time now to go and get in their way. For Olympia listeners, the activist events calendar is coming right up. Well, for Seattle listeners, I have some musical treats to help you get going. It's time to get to work. And actually, the events calendar has been suspended due to COVID, so we have some music for everyone to fill out this hour. This is a woman unknown to the general public, even though she's the best female guitar player around, Ellen McIlwain. Enjoy.
shout, you must slave to be a free woman. Hey, oh, sweet baby, I'd already joined the force. Yes, yes. Good time train, well, it does not need any train. No, it wins a race to the place where I'm going to pack up. Hey, oh, sweet baby, I'd already gone before.
Everybody Wants. Before that, we had Never Tell Your Mother. Before that, we had Sliding. And we started off with Ain't No Two Ways About It from that redheaded Wonder Woman, Ellen McIlwain. That's it for this week. See you next week. But in the meanwhile,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.